Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with Woj, taking you inside the game. Powered by digital media, find your voice. And now, your host, Adrian Wojnarowski.
Hey everyone, this is Adrian Wojnarowski of the Vertical on Yahoo Sports, as well as the Vertical Podcast with Woj. And I want to bring you something special that we did on the site yesterday. Our first NBA trade deadline live video special. 90 minutes of breaking news, analysis, and guest spots with the biggest newsmakers of the trade deadline day, including new Cleveland Cavaliers forward Channing Frye and Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey. Over the course of the show, you'll hear from our host, Chris Mannix, and the rest of our Vertical crew, including Bobby Marks, Brian Scalabrini, and our fantasy expert Andy Behrens, as well as myself. We'll be doing these live shows around all the big news events in the NBA, including the draft, summer free agency, and more. So let's get it started.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Vertical and Yahoo Sports first ever live NBA trade deadline show. For the next 90 minutes, we'll take you around the league and bring you up to speed on the latest trades, hear from GMs, coaches, and players live on the show, and, of course, the latest up-to-the-minute deals from the Vertical team. Joining me here on set is a man who spent 20 years in the Nets organization, the last five as an assistant GM, Bobby Marks. Also in studio is the Vertical's editor and NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski, and live from Salt Lake City, 11-year NBA veteran, Brian Scalabrini.
All right, you're good.
And guys, as the trade deadline officially comes to a close at 3 p.m. Eastern just moments ago, here is our most up-to-date information. The latest deal, Markieff Morris, the small forward from the Phoenix Suns. He goes over to Washington. The Wizards send back Chris Humphries, DeJuan Blair, and a protected first-round pick. So the Wizards strengthen their team going to the playoff run. The Denver Nuggets, they ship DJ Augustine, Steve Novak, and they get those guys, ship Randy Foy to Oklahoma City in a deal that gets the Nuggets gets Oklahoma City a nice backup two guard. And Channing Frye, he's on the move, going from the Orlando Magic to the Cleveland Cavaliers in a three-team trade. Anderson Varejao, he moves to Portland with a first-round pick. Reportedly, Varejao will be bought out, though, at some point. Joel Anthony, he goes to the Houston Rockets in exchange for Marcus Thornton and Donatas Montiunas. The second trade the Rockets have made in the last few days. They upgrade their roster significantly over the last couple of days, so they make some nice moves there. And Tobias Harris, the other move they made earlier. Tobias Harris, he goes to the Detroit Pistons. Stan Van Gundy gets himself another big man. Brandon Jennings, Ersan Ilyasova, two role players with expiring contracts. They move to the Orlando Magic. But we're going to start with the moves that we're going to get to the moves, I should say, that did happen. But I want to start with the move that didn't happen. Dwight Howard, the off-traveled center, is staying with the Houston Rockets. Woj, I want to start with you. The Rockets shopped Howard pretty hard last week. Why didn't a deal get done?
Chris, I just talked to sources in Houston. They do not have a trade for Dwight Howard. And they never got tremendous traction or really close to a deal. A big part of that is the fact that two things. Dwight Howard will be a rental for any team he goes to. He can opt out, become a free agent this summer. That's his plan. Teams did not want to give up their core assets to do that. One team that had interest in the last 24, 36 hours, the Milwaukee Bucks, but those talks went nowhere. You know, Charlotte coach Steve Clifford would have loved to have coached Dwight Howard again. He had him in Orlando, but the organization in Charlotte did not want to give up the significant amount of assets they would have had to Houston. So Houston's going to go forward for the rest of the season with Dwight Howard, and they're going to have to make a situation work in Houston between Dwight Howard and James Harden that is at minimally very tenuous.
Yeah, Woj, I'm not that surprised that Dwight Howard stayed put, because the perception of Dwight Howard around the league is a largely negative one. Teams still think he has talent, but his personality, his attitude, these things are all in question. And I think that really prohibited teams from making a lot of significant offers that might have been out there on the table for Dwight. So yeah, he finished the season in Houston. We'll see what happens to him down the line. Bobby, I want to go to you on this. From an organizational standpoint, what were the dangers, what were the positives potentially in bringing in a Dwight Howard?
Well, Chris, there's multiple. Remember, he's still a top 10 center in the league, but he is a short-term rental, as Woj said. You're going to only have him for the next 30 games.
Bauer can't do it.
You have to remember, right, what is his price tag in
the season? Let me try to get Daryl Morey.
How many assets are you willing to give up? The interesting question right now is, does Dwight Howard opt into that contract knowing that there is a limited market out there?
Could he actually do that, though? We went through this whole process before with the Orlando Magic, where Dwight eschewed that final year of his bopped into the final year of his contract against really the advice of a lot of people. Do you think that actually happens with Dwight this time around?
Well, his cap number next year is $23 million. Remember, the cap is going up to a projected $90 million. It could happen. Unlikely, though, there will be a team out there that will pay Dwight Howard this summer.
Scal, I want to bring you into this conversation. The Boston Celtics, they were interested in Dwight Howard at the right price. But let me ask you this. What was the perception? What is the perception of Dwight Howard around the NBA?
Well, I mean, it's not good in the sense he had all those attitude problems in L.A. Then he goes to Houston. You know, he doesn't play in these back-to-back games. He's starting to play more now, but his injuries have been a big deal. And he's just not one of these guys that you would consider, like, this guy's a winner. We can rally around him. He's going to bring it every night. I mean, and that's what you want when you're paying, you know, a top 10 center in the league with that kind of money. You're going to want a guy that every night is there to deliver. And Dwight Howard, with his on-again, off-again playing, my back hurts, my back doesn't hurt. I think guys in general don't like the fact that they might have to play with a guy like Dwight Howard and a guy you can't count on.
Now, let me ask this, though, Scal, because I don't know that the numbers for Dwight Howard are reflective of what his numbers could be if he was with another team. Not to say that he's a great player anymore. This is not 08, 09 Dwight Howard. He will never be that player ever again. But he is averaging, what, 8-9 shots per game with the Houston Rockets this year, 14-15 points per game with the Rockets this year. I got to believe that if he went to a different situation where he was playing with a different teammate other than James Harden, and I'm not blaming James Harden for this, but if he was in a different situation, we'd still see the 18, 19, 20 point per game score in Dwight Howard that we've seen. Do you still think he can be, say, the number two option on a team that hopes to win something?
Well, see, I never see Dwight Howard as how Dwight Howard sees himself. He thinks of himself as a back-to-the-basket guy who can score on the block. Now, you see it in spurts, but it doesn't impact winning as much. Where I see Dwight Howard is when he was with Stan Van Gundy, he's a high pick and roll player that rolls down the middle of the floor. You got shooting all around him. Everyone has to adapt to the shooting, and then he posts up right in front of the rim. Dwight doesn't want to do that. The work that it takes right now to play that way. He wants you to dribble the ball down and throw it to him on the block. And everyone that watches Dwight Howard over the course of a game, he might have two or three moves where you're like, okay, I can see how you can do that. But over the course of 20 possessions, 25 possessions, he's not a guy that you can count on going through day in and day out each possession throughout a 48-minute game. The problem is Dwight Howard sees himself like that, so he wants the ball, and he always complains about touches. But when you give him the ball and force feed him that scenario, he hasn't produced, and it doesn't actually help you win games.
Woj, we know that there was no divorce right now between Dwight Howard and the Rockets, but is a divorce inevitably coming for player and team?
Well, what the Rockets are telling me right now is, listen, they still think their best chance of winning, getting into the playoffs and competing this year is with Dwight Howard. But they've got to figure out a way to make this work with James Harden because that relationship is broken. But I'll say this, and I disagree with Scal a little bit on this. I think Dwight Howard has played he's played extremely well for this team in the postseason the last 2 years. He helped them get to a conference final last year. And part of the games he set out was similar to what San Antonio, other teams do with veteran players. Dwight Howard's been in the league since he was a teenager. There's a lot of mileage on his knees. They've tried to protect him the way other teams do with veteran players. I think Dwight's a player who has played in pain. Clearly, offensively, he has never evolved in a way that I think people wanted him to. But he's still a player that can impact winning. And I think there's blame to go around in Houston on more than just Dwight Howard on why this team has underachieved.
Bobby, let me ask you this. Put your general manager hat back on. You're a team with cap space, max level cap space. Do you go out there and make that type of offer to Dwight Howard?
I wouldn't. And it's going to bite you on the back end. For the first year, maybe $22, $23 million. But you got to remember, Howard, from a durability standpoint, back-to-backs, limited minutes going forward, do you want to be paying that player when he's 33, 34, 35, you know, $25, $26 million, even with the cap as it's going up that high, I wouldn't want to take that chance.
All right, let's talk about a team that did make a deal earlier today, and that's the Detroit Pistons. They acquire Tobias Harris. They make some moves earlier. Marcus Thornton, you see, Donatas Montiunas, both guys headed to Detroit for a reasonably low price, and Joel Anthony, a 2016 first-round pick. Bobby, let's start with you here. What do you think of this particular deal? Montiunas, when he's healthy, gives them pretty good value.
Well, that's the question. When he is healthy, he's missed, you know, he's only played in 8 games this year. He's missed, you know, 3/4 of the season so far. When he is healthy, he gives the Pistons a different element. The pick is another story. It's protected 1-8. So if Detroit, you know, makes the playoffs, it's going to Houston. If they fall out, it most likely will still go. So there's a lot of more to this story to come out. We got to see if he is healthy.
Look, I love these deals for the Detroit Pistons because what does it give them? Perimeter shooting bigs. And what is Stan Van Gundy like? Perimeter shooting bigs. Spent his entire career in Orlando surrounding Dwight Howard with perimeter shooters. Now he's got a guy in Tobias Harris having somewhat of a down year after the re-signing in the offseason. And Montiunas, who I thought was going to be maybe the most improved player at the start of this season. Injuries have derailed him a little bit, but there is lottery potential in that player. I think it's a risk, but I think it's a pretty good risk for Stan Van Gundy to take on a team that's not had much luck in recent years in free agency. Scal, I want to throw it to you specifically when it comes to Tobias Harris. You've seen him a couple of times play this year. What do you think of how he fits in with what Detroit wants to do?
I think he fits in absolutely perfect. You think he'll start at the 3, in my opinion, and then Stan Van Gundy will play him at the 4. So once again, stretching the floor out, allowing that 1-4 pick and roll, 1-5 pick and roll between Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond, which they run high volume of it down the stretch. If you come in and collapse on Drummond, because you have to, because you can throw the ball up to the rim, Tobias Harris is going to be standing wide open in the corner to knock down open shots. He struggled getting open shots in Orlando because Oladipo is not really a pass-first guy. And I know Reggie Jackson isn't that way either, but Stan Van Gundy is the type of guy that says, listen, if they shut down the lane, which you're going to have to, perimeter shots are going to be wide open. And telling you guys, do not sleep on Marcus Thornton in this trade. He's a throw-in. I get it, but I think I covered him last year. He can win you a playoff game. If they can somehow get to the playoffs and maybe get off of the eighth seed, get to the seventh seed, Marcus Thornton could be one of these J.R. Smith type of guys where he has 7 threes in a game and he makes a big impact.
Bobby, quickly, what does this do for Detroit's cap space? Because they're taking on some real salaries in this deal.
Well, what I love, they got their shopping done now. They are not going to be lumped in this summer with the rest of the 20 teams with, you know, $25 million in cap space. You've got Harris under contract for the long term. Montiunas, as he is a free agent, he is restricted, though. So Detroit will have every option to bring him back. So you've got 2 nice pieces under contract. You do not have to go out and overpay. And just jumping with what Scal just said about Marcus Thornton, I had Marcus in Brooklyn. He basically won us Game 7 up in Toronto. So he is a sharpshooter. He is a specialist. And he can win them a playoff game come April.
Yeah, you can read more about this deal on the Vertical website, Brooke. Most of these stories all day long on Yahoo Sports. All right, we're going to take our first time out here. Still to come, we'll break down more of today's deals and hear from others involved with today's trade deadline. Plus, we'll check in with Andy Behrens, who has some updates on some big-name fantasy stars. Stay with us. Welcome back to the NBA Trade Deadline Special here on The Vertical and Yahoo Sports. It was a busy last few hours. Let's take a look at some of the moves that we reported earlier today on Yahoo Sports and The Vertical. Markieff Morris, he's headed to Washington. Phoenix Suns trade him in exchange for Chris Humphries, DeJuan Blair, and probably the most valuable asset, that first-round pick that is protected. DJ Augustine, he's on the move. Denver Nuggets get Augustine, Steve Novak, and 2 second-round picks from Oklahoma City. Randy Foy headed to the Thunder. And Channing Frye, he's the centerpiece of a 3-team deal. He's going to the Cleveland Cavaliers from Orlando. Jared Cunningham, he's on his way to the Magic. Anderson Varejao, a first-round draft pick, go to the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers, according to the Vertical's agent Wojnarowski, likely to buy out the Anderson Varejao contract. And the Detroit Pistons, active today. They get Marcus Thornton, Donatas Montiunas, the Rockets, Joel Anthony, and a 2016 first-round pick. Well, I'll tell you what, we're looking at Markieff Morris. What is he, Woj, what do you look at what Markieff Morris brings to the Houston Rockets? What do you see with Markieff Morris going there?
Chris, listen, Morris for the Wizards is a player. This has been an up and down Washington team. He gives them certainly athleticism in the front court, scoring. you know, he's from Philadelphia. He's from the East. This brings him certainly closer to his roots. But Washington needed a spark, and this is a team that had big aspirations to, you know, of getting into the postseason and really going this year, really advancing. And for them, and I think what was appealing to a lot of teams about Markieff Morris, despite the issues with attitude, the legal problems he is facing, which really a lot of teams backed away from because of that, he is on a really cap-friendly contract. $8 million a year. He's got 3 years left on that contract that he signed in Phoenix. So there's some risk-reward to Washington doing this. But the Wizards felt very strongly they had to come back from All-Star break having improved themselves. And listen, Morris is a talent. Now they've got to find a way to get him incorporated into their group.
Scal, let's take it to you. The Washington Wizards need to do something to get this team into the postseason if they're going to have any hope of luring Kevin Durant in the offseason. Does Markieff Morris make them a better team?
Oh, definitely. And I think it solidifies what they're trying to do. They get Humphreys out of there, who really wasn't a three-point shooter. Same thing with Blair. Now you add Morris, who can play the four and shoot the three, and they're playing their best when Dudley's on the floor, knocking down shots. Now Markieff Morris is basically an addition to Dudley. You can play them together, but all they want to do is open the floor up for Brad Beal, John Wall, and play that up-and-down style. So I like the move. I think it will actually work out, and I agree with Woj. Cap-friendly contract, $8 million a year is like a mid-level exception now.
Yeah, Bobby, what does this deal do to the Wizards' cap space? Because they do want to pursue Kevin Durant this offseason one way or the other.
Well, they can, and it gives them $25 million in room still. They'll still be able to sign Bradley Beal. He's got a nice cap hold on there. But if they want to go out and get a player like Kevin Durant or a Nicholas Batum, a player like that, they can go out and do that. The pick that goes out, I'm fine with it. What I like is that Morris is going to be under contract for the next 3 or 4 years. And when that pick comes to fruition in Phoenix, he'll still be there.
Yeah, I like this deal for Washington because I think Markieff Morris can deliver at least what Marcus Morris delivered to the Detroit Pistons. He was separated from his brother. He didn't like it at the time, but he got there. He's played reasonably well for the Pistons. Stan Van Gundy has gushed to me about his work ethic and how he's come to work every single day as a professional. I think Markieff, playing multiple positions, you can play him 3, 4, 5 sometimes in a small lineup. That's what the Wizards want to do. They want to play small. And with Markieff Morris out there, I think you can do that. I think he really gives them an upgrade and probably gives them just enough of a boost with the right mix of players to get them into the postseason. So I like that deal for the Washington Wizards. Woj, I want to ask you about the Atlanta Hawks and the team that we've been talking about really for the last 48 hours. What are they going to do? What they do will dictate what a lot of other teams are able out there to do. They didn't trade Jeff Teague. They didn't trade Al Horford. What do you make of what the Hawks didn't do at the trade deadline?
Chris, Atlanta really felt the market out on their key players, Al Horford, Jeff Teague particularly. Two things. Number one, with Al Horford, he's going to be a free agent this summer. And what he has not given any indication to the Hawks on, and what he really has no interest in dealing with right now during the season, sources tell me, is what his future is. So the Hawks went through the trade deadline unsure of whether of how significant of a chance they have of re-signing Horford this summer as a free agent. And that impacted what teams were going to offer them. For example, Boston has great interest in Al Horford. They have the salary cap space to sign him this summer. And so Boston was hesitant, sources tell me, to offer a big package to a player in Horford that they could sign outright this summer. So they didn't get those kind of offers in Atlanta to feel like they were ready to blow this team up. And then Jeff Teague, another player they talked to teams about, but really midway through today, sources tell me, Atlanta had backed away from trade talks with Teague. And listen, you're seeing a lot of teams feeling like we have cap space going into the summer. We have an ability to approve our teams in free agency or absorbing contracts in July. We aren't giving up big assets at the trade deadline.
I tell you what, I understand not giving up a lot for a particular player on an expiring contract. But for me, the Boston Celtics might have missed an opportunity here. I don't know what the demands were from the Hawks for Al Horford from Boston, what they wanted, how many picks they wanted. But I look at the Celtics roster, and Al Horford would have been an ideal fit. He's a good guy. He's an elite power forward. He can score, play multiple positions. I think he would have been terrific. And all of a sudden, he would have given Boston that front court consistent low post threat that I think they've been lacking for most of the season. Suddenly, you have Al Horford, you've got Isaiah Thomas, you've got Marcus Smart, you've got Jay Crowder, you've got a solid bench, and an elite head coach in Brad Stevens. Man, I wonder about that deal. Scal, you're around the Celtics a lot. Do you think it was an opportunity missed not getting Al Horford?
100%. Now, obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of what was offered and what wasn't, the Brooklyn pick. But Al Horford, to me, is a stud. He's a perfect fit for Brad Stevens. You got him now shooting three-pointers, and he's shooting at a pretty decent clip. So he's a perfect fit for Brad Stevens' offense. He could play the four. He could play the five. You know, I think they maybe they missed out. I don't know what Atlanta asked for, so I can't really jump the gun on that one. But I guess I don't think Al Horford's going to end up in Boston as a free agent. I think there'll be too many other opportunities out there for him. And I think he'll choose to go to L.A. or Miami versus going to Boston. So I agree with you on that, Chris. And as far as Atlanta, to me, it's all about Jeff Teague. If Jeff Teague is playing well, and I don't know if it's because he's hurt this year, if he can't get over that injury bug, but if Jeff Teague plays well, I think their whole team goes. It's a lot more than missing Damari Carroll. I think Jeff Teague is a fraction of what he was last year. So I don't know if they were trying to move him for that reason. But I do know this. When Jeff Teague is at his best, Atlanta is very tough to stop on the offensive end.
Yeah, I got
to
tell you, Scal, I agree with you, too. I mean, that fifth year, Bobby, for Al Horford and the Celtics having him, that would be so enticing for a player about to enter his 30s. Not the back end of his career, but certainly might be looking for a long-term deal. Do you think that was an opportunity missed for the Celtics?
Well, I'm a gambler, and I would have pushed my chips to the middle there with Boston and Horford, because what will happen is that you can sell Horford the last 30 games. You put him in a Celtic uniform. You let him experience the playoffs in Boston. And that's your free agent pitch right there. Instead of sitting at a table on July 1 for 3 hours and try to put a pitch on why he should come and play for you, I would have taken the chance, even if it would have cost the Brooklyn pick. I get it. It's a top four pick. But if you can have an Al Horford and have a chance to go for it right now, you do it.
So you would have given up the Brooklyn pick, a top five pick for Al Horford?
I would have. This year, I would have done it. I would not have touched the Brooklyn pick in 2018. I wouldn't have done anything with the swap or the Memphis pick, but I would have done that pick right now.
Gutsy, because that Brooklyn pick is very enticing, I think, to the people of Boston and that organization. Well, we like to break news here in the show. And Woj, what do you got for us?
Chris, leaked sources tell me that the Detroit Pistons have traded Joel Anthony to the Philadelphia 76ers. Detroit will send a future second-round pick to the Sixers to take on Anthony's contract. So now Detroit gets that salary off. And again, Philadelphia is in that acquisition mode. And this allows them to free up some money and space for the players they brought into the Pistons here at the deadline.
Wait, you're trying to tell me that Philadelphia likes second round picks? Is that no way?
They've got it from here all the way down the coast. They do.
Hey, Bobby, let me ask you this about when you have a guy like Joel Anthony, probably on the back end of his career, not going to contribute much on the floor, but he is a veteran presence, and they just brought in Elton Brand. What can a guy like Joel Anthony do for a team that has a plethora of young bigs that they're trying to groom?
Well, let's see if he even gets to Philly. You know, he is a prime candidate could be bought out by March 1st. He is a veteran. He's a big. He's been limited this year, but he is one of those guys. But he is a veteran, and I'm sure, Sam and Jerry Colangelo down there are going to convince him to kind of wrap his arms around him and have him in that locker room.
Is it the right thing to do to buy out a guy like that? Because he can be a positive influence, championship experience with the Miami Heat.
Well, you have to remember, with buyouts, you better make sure you have a team on the back end to leave any money on the table. And if it's going to be a straight waiver cut or a buyout, you know, that's something that they're going to have to figure out in the next week.
Mm-hmm. All right, quick update. Want to let you know that Channing Frye, just traded to Cleveland, will be joining us live right here on the show in 10 minutes. So please stick around for that. But first, let's switch gears, take a look into some fantasy basketball. Andy Behrens checks in with a pair of big names that could be returning from injury to help fantasy owners.
Fantasy owners have a dilemma with both Blake Griffin and Chris Bosh. We need to talk about these two injury situations as we head into the second half of the season. And we have to start with the Blake Griffin situation. Still no timeline on him returning from that broken hand. It's his shooting hand, so he's not able to put in the requisite amount of work right now. This is a dicey situation going forward. Blake is still owned in 93% of Yahoo Fantasy Leagues. That's probably too much. You have to expect him to miss at least a month, maybe come back late March. right in the most important weeks of the fantasy season. So if you're a head-to-head owner, that's okay. You still get them in the big weeks. But if you're a rotisserie owner, you have to use that empty roster spot. I think he's a cut in most fantasy formats. Another story that's come up lately, Chris Bosh. He misses the All-Star game with a calf issue. It turns out he's back on blood thinners. While he's on the medication, he's not going to be playing for Miami. This is a potential season-ending situation. If that happens, it's obviously, for fantasy purposes, it's Justice Winslow, it's Amari Stoudemire who get the bump. They're going to see plenty of double-doubles down the stretch. Really, though, you hope the best for Chris Bosh.
Bobby, quickly, some breaking news. Lance Stephenson, he's been traded from the Los Angeles Clippers, reportedly for Jeff Green. A first-round pick as a sweetener thrown in by the Clippers. Seems like a hefty price to pay for a guy like Jeff Green.
Well, it's a rental again, you know, 30 games. With the Clippers, they have a pick going out to Toronto in 2017. It looks like it's a 2019 pick. You can't trade picks in consecutive years. They'll get Green, a bench player, put him on the floor. You can do it right now with Blake recovering. It's a gutsy move for the Clippers. For Memphis, it's a roll of the dice. Remember, their pick goes to Denver in the 6 to 14 range. So if they've stubbed their toe over the next 30 games, that pick is going to the Nuggets.
Scal, you got a good look at Jeff Green during his days with the Celtics. Inconsistency has kind of been his hallmark throughout the course of his career. What can he bring to the Clippers?
Well, I think Doc Rivers knows exactly what Jeff Green is. He's not what everyone wanted him to be at one time, a superstar of this league. But listen, he can run the floor, and he can make open shots. He can drive closeouts. He will get those open looks with Chris Paul and the offense that they run. Doc's familiar with him. So I think if Doc was okay with making this move, then he knows exactly how he's going to use him in L.A.
Bobby, Lance Stephenson, there was a time when he was really highly regarded. Last year at Indiana, even despite the blowing in LeBron's ear and that nonsense, this guy was regarded as maybe not an elite two guard, but on the cusp right below it, that tier right below it. He goes to Charlotte, signed what I thought was a ridiculous contract, and turns out to be a smart one for the team that signed him to it. What's happened with Lance Stephenson, and do you see any team out there willing to commit multiple years, guaranteed money to him in his next deal?
Well, you better do your homework if you're going to make that commitment to him in the offseason, or if he even makes it to Memphis. You know, could he be another one of those guys, you know, a possible buyout? You know, they can evaluate him for the next 30 days. They've got a team option, you know, at the end of June, and they can cut bait with him. But his fall is remarkable right now. You know, where he was in Indiana to Charlotte to the Clippers, and now getting traded again. But he's still young. There will be a team out there this summer. There always is, to take a chance on him.
I think there will be a team that takes a chance on him, but it'll be a flyer. It'll be a one-year contract. He's not going to get anywhere near the type of guaranteed money I think he probably would have been hoping at this point of his career. There has to be just a type of team that he has to play on. Whatever Indiana played like, through bigs, with Paul George, with a more patient, deliberate offense where he could play off of pick and rolls and off of post players. But it's almost like a quarterback, like RG3 or Colin Kaepernick. You've got quarterbacks that can only play in a specific type of system. Lance Stephenson, to me, strikes me now as a guy that can only play in a specific type of system. Scott, let me ask you, if you were running a team or the coach of a team, would you go out and try to sign Lance Stephenson to a team-friendly type of contract?
No, and I'll tell you the reason why. We go back to the Indiana to now. The game has evolved. Shooting is becoming much more of a premium. Lance Stephenson, not a great three-point shooter at all. I mean, at sometimes earlier this season, and even last season, he was under 20%. So you want guys that knock down shots. Go out there and you can find a lot of players without the baggage that can make open shots. But Lance Stephenson, he can dribble, he can make big plays, maybe, yes. He could defend a guy once in a while, but at the end of the day, shooting is an all-time premium right now, and the game is changing, and Lance Stephenson is being sent behind.
All right, we're going to take a break, but stick with us. When we come back, we'll chat with the newest member of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Channing Frye. Stick around. Welcome back to the NBA Trade Deadline Special. A flurry of deals have happened in the last few hours, and one of the more significant ones involved Channing Frye, the Orlando Magic forward, now a Cleveland Cavaliers forward. And Channing joins us here on the Yahoo Trade Deadline Special. Channing, I know you've been hearing trade rumors around your name for the last two or three days. How's it feel to finally get all this settled?
You know what? I actually was hearing trade rumors the first 2 weeks of the season. So, you know, being in the league for 10 years, man, you know, I kept telling everybody, you know, nothing happens until you get that phone call or you get that meeting in the room. And so, you know, right now, of course, I have a flurry of feelings, but I'm excited to get to Cleveland and try to help out as much as I can and just sit down and talk and to be able to play with those that level of players.
Jenny, you weren't getting the consistent playing time in Orlando. Was that more about the Magic wanting to play some of that young talent than it was perhaps what you have left?
You know what? I can't really say that. I had a great relationship with Coach Skiles, and I think we were just trying to figure out lineups that win. You know, and sometimes, you know, when I was starting lineup, we were winning, I don't know, 20 out of 25 or something like that, and then we lost like 15 out of 16. So, you know, there was a lot of inconsistency there from everybody. So he's just trying to do a job and help give the team as much chance to win. So, you know, just a situation where, you know, things just didn't work out, man. Nobody took it personal. I, like I said, I have a great relationship with the guys on the team. I'm going to miss them. I've seen them grow a lot in these 2 years and wish them the best.
At Channing, it's Bobby Marks. Let's talk about your range of emotions off the court. You know, we thought you were going to the Clippers. Now you're heading to Cleveland, and just the transition of getting up to Cleveland, and just what's going through your mind right now.
To be honest, how can I be mad? Really, you know, the only thing I'm kind of upset about is like, you know, I'm outside right now and it's 72 degrees and sunny. So I'm like packing all these jackets up. So, you know, in all honesty, I just want to go, you know, and win. I want to help a team win, and I want to go to the playoffs. You know, I had those expectations when I came to Orlando, and it just didn't come true. And so, you know, business part of the game happens. And so I just got to be prepared and give myself the best chance to help this team to win some extra games.
Channing, have you thought at all at this point about how you fit with the Cavaliers?
You know what? I always think about everything about how I could fit in. And I think right now what I do is what I think I've been doing over the last few years is just giving guys space that they need to create and take it to the rack. And so, I think for me, you have guys like, you know, Mozgov, you have Tristan Thompson, you have LeBron, you have, you know, Kevin Love, you have all these guys that want to get to the rack, that want to score in the paint, you know, including LeBron. And so what I do is just space the floor and create opportunities for them in that situation. And then on screen and rolls, you have guys like Kyrie, J.R. Smith, Villadova. And so, you know, for right now, I'm just going to kind of go with that. And then, you know, on the defensive end, like I said, I'm not out there blocking shots like Whiteside. But I think, you know, my defense is a little underrated. And I think, you know, on this team, I'm just going to continue to try to strive and do the best I can.
Channing, you had one deep run in the playoffs, you know, with the Phoenix Suns back in 2010, but only been to the postseason twice in your career. Is there a sense of kind of invigoration going to a team that's not only going to make the playoffs, but is going to be expected to compete for a championship?
Well, I think, you know, even though I didn't make the playoffs only but three times, I think two of those teams, you know, we won 48 games, and I think another team, we won 41 and lost both times by, you know, one time not going into the playoffs. So I think I've been on teams that have tried to play for something other than the regular season, and it just makes it that much more fun. You're a lot more focused. You're a lot more team-oriented, and things mean much more. Each game, regardless of what the score is, you're playing for the next week. You're playing to get into rhythm. And you know, me coming here, it's going to be a different experience. I've never been traded halfway through the season or more than halfway through the season. And so I'm just going to try to fit my way in and make sure these guys know that I'm here, you know, not to mess around or to ride anybody's coattails, but to help them win. And, you know, everybody's going to get an opportunity, you know, in certain chances, and I just have to take advantage of mine when it comes.
Tyronn Lue talked about playing more up-tempo since he took over for David Blatt. The possessions in Cleveland are actually up in his short time as the head coach. Does that more up-tempo style, does that fit in to what you think you bring to a team?
Oh, without a doubt. I think you look at, you know, even when we played him, I thought they played a little slow. You know, with LeBron coming at you full speed, Kyrie Irving coming at you full speed, it's almost impossible to stop those guys in those kind of situations. But then with guys like Tristan and going to the rack and Kevin Love and J.R. Smith, you know, spreading the floor, it's almost impossible to guard them like that. You know, sometimes you can kind of lure them into taking a bad two or something if you get them in a half court. But now that they're up and running, I watched them the other day, and it's the pace of the game right now is really good for them. And I think, you know, when I come, we'll see how it is. And, you know, for me, it's extremely well, you know, especially trailing the floor. You know, is that big guy going to stop LeBron or Kyrie, or is he going to, you know, take away the three of me trailing?
I mean, nobody can play as fast as those Phoenix teams, right?
No. You know what? I think the league is, well, I think one team is playing that fast, but I think they're just a team of guards. But, you know, I think for me, Each team has to have their own identity. And so, you know, I'm going to try to fit into the identity that the Cavs already have and have been have for a bunch of years. And, you know, I'm just coming in and trying to help out and take advantage of the situations that I'll be given.
Well, Channing, we appreciate you giving us a couple of minutes. We know it's a busy day for you. Best of luck in Cleveland, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, Channing Frye, the newest member of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's bring in Brian Scalabrine. Scal, Channing seems pretty excited about the way he fits into this Cavaliers team. What do you think about the way a player like him fits onto that roster?
I mean, it's a perfect fit. You think about Cavs are always going to be looking for more shooting. They're not interested in this regular season. All they have to do is figure out how are they going to beat the Warriors or how are they going to beat the Spurs. And the way you do that is by having shooting on the floor. It's the reason why LeBron went out and traded Wiggins to get Kevin Love. Now you have Channing Frye. Tristan Thompson more solidifies himself as the five, gives them a little flexibility if they want to lose Mozgov next year. For this team, they have so much more lineup flexibility with Channing Frye out there because they have two bigs that can stretch the floor, defend, and rebound their position. I love the move for the Cavs. I think it's for them to take that next step. I still don't think they're better than the Warriors. I still think the Warriors would beat them, but it really does gets them to that next level where the Warriors have to make some decisions when the floor is going to be spread and LeBron and Kyrie are driving down the lane.
Well, from everything that I heard in the day leading up to the trade deadline, the Cavaliers were kind of scouring for that more defensive-minded forward. Frye's a terrific shooter, not exactly that defensive guy that maybe some other people might have been on the market. Did Cleveland get the player that they were looking for?
They really did, Chris. They were aggressive in the last few days. They were very concerned with the Clippers' ability to go in and get Frye from Orlando, but the Clippers kept holding out for that Jeff Green deal with Memphis. They finally made it, had to give up a first-round pick. They've given up a lot of picks with the Clippers, but they get, obviously, Lance Stephenson's deal off, and Jeff Green's a player that Doc Rivers had in Boston he's very familiar with. But for Cleveland, listen, they were very aggressive, because in order to bring Frye in and his salary, they had to get Anderson Varejão off. They had to give a second-round pick to Portland to get Varejão out to bring in Frye. And they were very concerned over the last 48 hours that they were in line behind the Clippers. But they wanted shooting. And listen, remember that Phoenix team? When Phoenix lost Channing Frye in free agency to Orlando, you talked to their coaching staff. When they fell off last year, the biggest thing they pointed to was the loss of Channing Frye and his ability to spread the floor and make defenders have to go out and cover him. Even when he's not making shots, you have to find him on the floor. That's a great premium in the NBA. I think Channing Frye has a chance to make a huge impact for this Cavaliers team.
Bobby, Orlando moved Tobias Harris earlier in the week. They got two expiring contracts back. Now you see them move Channing Frye. What do you think the mindset is of Orlando with these recent deals?
Well, basically what they did was they flopped Frye for Ilyasova, created a bunch of cap space this summer. They could have about $42 million in room. They're going to put Aaron Gordon at the three. They're going to try Mario Hezonja at the three. They're going to try Evan Fournier at the three. So they are getting younger. They added Brandon Jennings, a point guard that they desperately needed with C.J. Watson being out most of this year. They're still in the playoff race, but with the teams in front of them getting a lot better, it's going to be tough down the stretch.
Yeah, to me, this seems like a do-over for the Orlando Magic. They signed Tobias Harris back in the offseason. They made a run at Paul Millsap, didn't get him. I think they had a little buyer's remorse when they got Harris and saw maybe he didn't quite fit in to what they were trying to do under Scott Skiles. Now they do free up some room for Aaron Gordon to get some more minutes at a power forward spot. Any minutes you can free up for Mario Hezonja, I say take. Mario Hezonja is a terrific young talent, giving him more time on the floor because he's not your prototypical European player, is he? He's a guy that not only can shoot the three, but he goes to the basket in the same way kind of that Manu Ginobili went to the basket. He goes to the basket trying to assault the rim, not trying to throw up floaters around it.
Well, he's got a maturity about